So, all right, we are going to get started. My name is David Tesar, and I am a technical evangelist at Microsoft. I've been at Microsoft for over 10 years now. And today we are going to be covering Windows Active Directory asterisk, meaning there's a lot more than just running a domain controller, such as Active Directory Federation Services, Windows Azure Active Directory, and I've labeled it plus Windows Azure for a reason, you'll see here. So hopefully remove some of that confusion. But how many of you know about Windows Azure FTW? No? is that a new product? No. No, it's not. FTW, what's that acronym? Anybody know? For the win! Thank you! Yes! All right. There we go. Okay. What are we going to cover today? Well, I did not write the description for this session. So if you signed up thinking you were going to get a high, fluffy level marketing session on Windows Azure Active Directory, well, you should leave right now because you're not going to get that. We are going to go deep into a number of different topic areas, one of them being just getting the essentials of running Active Directory in Windows Azure. So if you're going to run Active Directory on a virtual machine in Windows Azure, how to do that. Two, you know, understanding the identity sync options of going from Active Directory to Windows Azure Active Directory. And then third, learning how to go from Active Directory to full federation, single sign-on, and dir sync with Windows Active Directory in under an hour. Some of you may think, what? Is he joking? No, I am serious. And what are some of the main things that are the takeaways for you? One is, running Active Directory on Windows Azure, it's pretty straightforward. Once you kind of get the hang of Azure a little bit and understand some things, it's not too bad. Two, you probably want to have Windows Azure Active Directory and Federation, and I'll get into that in a little bit. And then also, Active Directory to Windows Azure Federation can be pretty quick to enable, hence one of the main objectives we have there. If you are looking for a deep dive or a quick start on multi-force scenarios, or non-Active Directory scenarios for Federation, you will not get that today because there's just way too much to cover in just the time slot that I have. In fact, some people just cover running AD on infrastructure as a service or just the other half of things. We're giving you a cram-packed session here of 75 minutes, so be prepared. This is the overall flow that we'll go through just to kind of keep you on track of, you know, where we're headed here today. But first off, why Active Directory on Windows Azure infrastructure as a service? So, you know, first of all, why do I care? Why do I even need to run Active Directory on a VM in Windows Azure? Well, the first scenario that is pretty common is if you're running something up in Windows Azure, a virtual machine, some kind of service up there, you probably want to have a VPN tunnel back into your network, and you're going to have some services up there, right? You're going to have, let's say, SharePoint, RDS, whatever you're running there. It could be your corporate application that's in Windows Azure. Well, what happens when the red X of death comes down? No. the VPN tunnel, let's say, or your network connection goes down. Well, you probably still want to have that SharePoint, those RDS VMs to be able to work independently of the connection back to your corporate network or the AD authentication credentials, as well as for performance reasons, right? You don't want SharePoint to have to, you know, sit there and talk over the VPN network with possible delays and bandwidth concerns there as well. So that's one of the major reasons why you might want to run AD in Windows Azure. Next up, there is disaster recovery. And most certainly there are a lot of scenarios around disaster recovery. Active Directory is just one of those. And the thing I want to point out is, you know, you should treat, or could treat Windows Azure, I should say, like just an extension or a branch site in your network. And in this case, you know, we've got a site in the West US Windows Azure Data Center. And, you know, you'll set up an Active Directory, you'll set sites and services, and you'll have that Windows Active Directory site on a separate IP subnet. It could be an internal, you know, address range. And if, ooh, the massive big red X comes down and destroys your Active Directory or your website, your on-premise services, I mean, how many of you out there have had your Active Directory go down inside your corporate network? Raise your hand. Like a few of you, okay? I know that you know, most of us hopefully have a number of 80 servers that are you know, backed up inside your corporate network. So if one of those goes down, that's great. But the other scenario too, right, is if you blow up a ton of objects and you haven't enabled Active Directory Recycle Bin, you know, having another site to, you know, that's maybe a far behind on your lag is kind of good to have. Well, the other scenario, right, so let's say that your AD goes down on premise and you've got this VPN tunnel set up in a domain controller replicating in Windows Azure. Well, that user then, right, is going to still be able to authenticate across the VPN tunnel. Maybe your domain controller or all your virtualized DCs are on a switch, and that switch just dies, right? And another switch goes out to Windows Azure, or it just hits the router, right? There's all kinds of scenarios that could happen here. There, the user is still going to be good to go. The other one, and this isn't really tied to Active Directory, but this is to kind of get your wheels thinking on the disaster recovery piece on Windows Azure. Windows Azure has the ability for you to store up VHDs, your custom VHDs, whatever that happens to be, right? You could have SharePoint, RDS, your corporate app, whatever that may be, and you could, you know, have those saved, so the storage cost is pretty low or pretty minimal to just keep your storage cost there, and then fire up those VMs scripted when, let's say, things go wrong or go awry, and then you could instantly fire up, let's say, SharePoint or a website or your corporate app or whatever it is, and you know, have possibly another way to get to those services in the event that, you know, your things blow up on you, right? And this is, you know, this way you don't have to go purchase another data center. You don't have to, you know, you could potentially save a lot of a cost here and set a disaster recovery site up fairly quickly. Okay. So let's get into a demo of running a new DC on Windows Azure Infrastructure as a Service. Let me switch over to my demo machine right now. Not that one, this one. Okay, here we are logged into the Windows Azure Management Console. And one of the first things I want to point out is the virtual networks. I have already gone in and created a new virtual network. You can easily do that yourself if you go in New, Virtual Network, and go through the wizard here. I'm not going to go through all this because, you know, it's pretty straightforward going through the wizard. But I do want to point out some things that after you've created this virtual network. Number one is that when you go in here, all of your virtual machines inside of Windows Azure are going to have a DHCP assigned address. So in this case here, the Windows Azure DC, it's got a 10.10.4 IP address. Okay, and that is going to be always going to be the first IP address of your new virtual network. So whatever that network is, in this case I have a 10.10.10 network. The first IP in Azure it is DHCP, but it will always be .4. Okay, so some people freak out and say, "Oh my gosh, you know, it's not a static IP address. Oh no!" Right? Well, it's a little different in Azure what you're used to. It's DHCP, but it is effectively like a static address as long as you don't delete that compute instant or that DC from Windows Azure. It'll always be that .4 address. Okay, and so, you know, if I shut down, powered up, it'll still be the same IP. And that's totally okay for Active Directory to have that scenario there. The other thing to point out is that you probably are going to want to have, if it's an extension of your on-premise network, a connection to your VPN. And in this case, right, you have, this is set up actually at my house. For those of you who want to do this on the cheap, you can use TMG unofficially, right? It's not officially supported, but it does work. That's what I'm using now to my house to get a connection to Windows Azure. I know that's something in the future that as the product team is looking at to make it an officially supported thing of, let's say, using Windows Server to make the VPN connect. But for now, we have a list of hardware-supported devices, Cisco, Junipers, the like, that you can use to connect that VPN back to your corporate network to Windows Azure. The other thing to point out is, just so you know, there are egress charges. So Windows Azure for inbound data transfer, it does not charge you anything. For outbound data transfer, it does charge you a very small amount, but just something to be thinking about as your overall design planning of network traffic and whatnot. Okay, the other thing to point out, too, is there's no connection between VNets. So if I go in and I create another virtual network, those VMs are not going to be able to talk to each other. That being said, you still have the ability here to add additional subnets within your virtual network. So if you wanted to have, you know, a 10, 10, 20 network, right, or you know, any other kind of variation, you'd be able to do that within the same virtual network. And those networks would be able to talk to each other. The other thing that's really important to point out here is the DNS servers. And this is something that I hope that the product team will fix. But when you go to create your virtual network, it's going to ask you for what DNS servers do you want to specify. And when you do that at this time, that is a fixed thing. So I'm kind of saving you some learning experience here on creating VNets. But when you create your first VNet, you specify DNS servers, you want to think about what DNS servers am I going to want to have on this virtual network to start. Because once you do that, it's kind of locked in. Again, that seems like something I hope we'll fix in the future, but for now, it's locked. So anytime that a machine joins that virtual network, it's going to get those set of IP addresses on the network. So in this case, I knew that the first machine I was going to bring up in the virtual network was my DC, and I just put the .4 address in there, and I know that that's going to run DNS on it, so it's automatically going to, you know, get the right address. So it's another tip to think about. So that's kind of some foundational stuff on virtual networks. But now let's go ahead and create a new virtual machine. I'm going to create a new virtual machine from a gallery image. You've probably seen this before. And I'll call this my Azure DC4. Type my password. Okay. All right, and then I'll just choose one small core. That's fine. Of course, you have the ability to choose any number of sizes you want. I'll choose next, and then when you go to create your domain controller, you're going to want to put that into your virtual network. Now, in this case, I have my machines. These are all there on my virtual network, and I already have existing DCs there. So in this case, I'm just adding an additional DC. You can choose your storage account, and then you'll notice here that it's also joined to the core virtual network, so 10, 10, 10 network. Okay, we choose next, and then the availability set. That's an important one to think of. You want to make sure you have an availability set for your DCs. So you probably are going to want to have at least two up there because SLAs are tied to availability sets. And you get 99.95 uptime when you have an availability set on Windows Azure. I've already pre-created one, just so we don't have to wait. I'll go ahead and click yes, so you can see here that running. But what I have done is go in and create an existing domain controller. And in this case, you can see that we have the existing domain controller already created. So let me zoom up here. Okay, here we have 10.10.8. That just happens to be the next IP address that's on there. And what we'll do, one of the other big important things to point out when you're creating a virtual machine that is a domain controller is that you're going to want to have a separate disk for your ntds.dit and sysvol volumes. Okay, so I'm going to attach a separate disk. And the reason this is because there's a read-write property by default on caching on your disk subsystem in Windows Azure. That really messes with the database. So you could have corruption of your directory service if you just leave one VM and set the defaults when you click through to upgrade your domain controller to use the local disk. So what we'll do is we'll attach a disk here, and we'll choose the caching as none. And I just chose 10 gigabytes. click OK. And then it's going in and attaching a disk to that virtual machine. I'll then go in and connect up to that virtual machine. Click OK. Open this. And I'm just going to put in the password that I had earlier. Type in that again. Live demos, here you go. No, it actually, yeah, so here's a little learning tip there. It doesn't matter what you put in there until you join the domain. So even though it's the name itself is not there, it won't matter. So if I'm going to, I'll attach another disk to this guy. And let's go in here. So it actually already created this. So, you know, creating the domain controller itself is pretty straightforward, right? I mean, all of you know how to, you know, do a DC promo and do the promotion. I mean, that's going to be effectively the same thing. So, you know, the only thing I wanted to really show you when I connected up here is just that when you connect, you're just going to want to format that disk that was added inside of Azure and then use that as your drive letter to connect to the virtual machine. So I'm going to just keep, I think, moving forward here if this doesn't connect up. I just probably am not having the right password. Yep. So yeah, let's just keep moving. It's not really essential here to connect up to the VM. And I've got some other VM demos here later that will show the connection to that. Okay. So let's switch back to the slides here. Okay. And let's keep on moving because we've got a lot to cover. All right, that's really, you know, in a nutshell, that is Active Directory on Windows Azure. It's not too tough. I kind of gave you all the tips and tricks behind there. I got a link for you towards the end as far as, you know, being able to go through the big, long paper of all these different things, but I gave you kind of the essentials of the things that you need to know if you're going to create a DC inside of Windows Azure. Okay, first up, kind of do some housekeeping here. The first thing is the identities for Microsoft Cloud Services. And there's a lot of different names that are thrown out there that relate to logging in to Windows Azure and these different services. On the left-hand side, you see personal services. And this is what most people know about. Hey, it's my Hotmail account, my Live account, we often refer to it as my Microsoft account or your Microsoft ID. On the right-hand side, we have organizational services. So you have things like Office 365, Windows Intune, Dynamics CRM, and the really kind of the best way to describe those are org IDs. And so you might hear me referring to those as org IDs. But sometimes people refer to these as your onMicrosoft.com account, your organizational account, and this could be, you know, this is your account that is in Windows Azure Active Directory. And this will make more sense here in a minute, but I wanted to clear that up first. Okay, why Windows Azure Active Directory? Why the heck do we need that? Right? So you have, we have Active Directory, which is running on a VM, and Active Directory as you're used to it. But what is Windows Azure Active Directory, and why did we create it? Well, this is the scenario that we had quite some time ago. And Office 365 was probably our first service that utilized Windows Azure Active Directory. We used to call it something else. I'm not even going to try, and I think there were a couple names beforehand. But effectively, that is, if you ever use BPOS or the first version of that, that was using the directory that we are now calling Windows Azure Active Directory. And the scenario was this, right? Well, we have this new cloud service, and this cloud service is Office 365 or BPOS, right, what it used to be called. And we need users to be able to authenticate and log in to this cloud service. And we don't want to have to rely upon the on-premise Active Directory, right? And what do we do about that? And that's why we created Windows Azure AD, right? So that user could authenticate. Now, Windows Azure Active Directory was reimagined from our knowledge that we had on Active Directory, because now we're in a cloud service, things are different there, right? Active Directory was created many, many years ago, and it was thought about for on-premise scenarios. Windows Azure Active Directory is kind of the reimagined cloud service for identity based on our existing knowledge and learning. So the problem, though, for a lot of people, or the challenge, I guess, for a lot of people is like, well, wait a minute. I still have an on-premise AD, right? What do I do about that? Because, you know, if you want to use any of our services, our cloud services, you're going to have to have a Windows Azure Active Directory account. And then the question becomes, well, how do I get those synchronized? And so to be clear, and this is kind of confusing for some folks, Windows Azure Active Directory is totally different than Active Directory or running Active Directory on a virtual machine in Windows Azure. So those are two different things, all right? And when we, you know, I'll get into the synchronization scenarios here in just a second, but just to give you an idea, there are ways to synchronize that, and there are a lot of different things that you can authenticate to against Windows Azure Active Directory. It's not just Microsoft's cloud services, although that's probably one of the primary reasons that people use it. You know, so CRM Online, Office 365, Windows Intune, those are all great, but your organization can still write company applications that utilize Windows Azure Active Directory for authentication. Okay? And if you're moving forward, and especially if you're creating a new application that's cloud-based, you probably are going to want to write to that and not to the kind of the older school, I will say, just on-premise Active Directory, right? There's a lot of advantages to Windows Azure AD. Okay. Well, so that right-hand side, you know, that right-hand side was we have an on-prem AD, and we need somehow to remedy the situation of going from that on-premise AD to having users be able to authenticate using those accounts in Windows Azure Active Directory, right? A user comes and connects up to Office 365. Office 365 is going to look to Azure Active Directory. How do we get those AD accounts in there? Well, there's three major options that you have here, okay, as far as choice to make and what you want to do. The first one, and I don't know if you want to even really call this an option, but I think it's important to list, is no integration. So in this case, on the left-hand side, you have your on-premise user. That's joe@contoso.com. And on the right-hand side, the big other gray box there is Windows Azure Active Directory, and all those cloud services, right, are connected to that. In the first scenario, really, what you're going to do is be creating a separate user account. And you can create that via a number of different means. You could go into the console, just create a user account. Or, in that domain name, right, you could add even a managed domain name. So you could have contoso.com even up in Windows Azure Active Directory. But the reality is that user account is going to be totally separate. The username might even be the same, right? The domain name might even be the same. But in this case, you know, you're going to have two user accounts, two totally separate sets of passwords, all right? There's really no synchronization going on, even though you may kind of fake it, so to speak, of the best faking you could do is have the same username and the same password and manually put those or automated put those into the cloud, right, into Windows Azure AD. But you're still, you know, it's a very manual effort. It's very disconnected. There's not really synchronization going on, okay? The next one is directory synchronization. This is DirSync. How many people have used DirSync or heard of DirSync? Cool. All right. We got lots of people familiar. That's good. DirSync is, it's not too hard. It's pretty straightforward when you have single forest. And what happens there is when you enable DirSync, and DirSync needs to be on a 2008 R2 box, and that's just an agent that needs to be joined to the domain. All that does is that takes that identity, and it makes a copy of that user account up in Windows Azure Active Directory. So you don't need to manually go and provision. It's going to automatically synchronize one way, and that's an important distinction. The DirSync goes from your on-premise, and it synchronizes your master copy is your Active Directory on-premise, and that moves that up to Windows Azure Active Directory up there. So all your user accounts, whatever's on-premise, will be mirrored up in the cloud. And there's a number of different options that kind of fall into this dir-sync scenario of how to do that. The first one is, you know, just dir-sync the client itself. And I'm not going to get into all of the different scenarios here, but I wanted to give you kind of a lot of reading material for for later if you download the deck. But kind of in a nutshell, dir-sync is great for really, you know, pretty simple scenarios. The Office 365 connector, you're probably not going to be using that unless you've got, you know, somebody engaged and you've got a really crazy, you know, Office 365 deployment kind of thing going on. And then the PowerShell Graph API, that's really for your developers, right? I mean, if you're developer guys or you've really got somebody who's, hey, I want to programmatically do stuff to automate things and customize stuff, then that would be what that's for. The last one I want to point out that's really important is Forefront Identity Manager. How many people here have heard of FIM, Forefront Identity Manager? Okay, cool. We got lots of identity folks here. Good. So with FIM, right, I mean, it has one of its components is directory synchronization. And it's really good for multi-force scenarios, but there's a lot of other great capabilities there for password resets, you know, automating user accounts, creations, compliance. There's a lot of good things in there if, you know, for any really sized organization. But at a bare minimum, you know, dir-sync's kind of your base. Okay. The last scenario, and I think this is for a lot of folks going to be probably the preferred scenario, is directory and the federated single sign-on. And in this case, we have, and you're going to set up dir-sync as well, right? You're still going to synchronize your directory service. And here, what you're going to do is not only copy that account, but where it gets different is in the authentication mechanism here. So that account is still copied over, right? But what happens now when that user authenticates is instead of the password being stored, let's say, locally in the Windows Azure AD, a token is going to happen for that authentication. It's going to connect back to your Active Directory Federation server, get a token, and then that token is going to be used to authenticate, right? And this is really good when you want a single password policy that's mastered on-premise. You don't have to worry about any weird synchronization stuff because you're federated, right? And so your passwords are effectively on-premise. They're effectively on your on-premise Active Directory. And, you know, single sign-on and all these things are going to happen because it's just using your corporate credentials. You know, so true single sign-on is possible with this, where you log into your corporate machine, and that's it, right? You're logged into the different services that are up there. With federation options, there are a few here. I'm only really going to be covering today ADFS because that's the ones that are in-house for us. And you've got two other options there, third-party STSs and Shibboleth. I won't really dig into those, but you know, if you've got special case scenarios, I wanted to list them up there for you, non-Active Directory or, you know, special cases that you want to use. For most people, you know, ADFS is going to work for them. Okay, so kind of break things down. Let's give you an analysis of what are your identity options. All right, so the no integration. On the no integration side, you know, it's probably going to be good for just only smaller organizations. You may not have Active Directory on-premise, and you really just want something quick and easy to do to get people running, right? And the positives of this is, hey, it's super easy to get at least initially started, right, for a small number of users. And, you know, it is possible to have that same domain name, so users could know that, oh, my credentials are this, you know, my username's the same, but I may have a different password. You know, it's simple, not ideal, but it's... That's one option, right? The next one is directory only. So just doing dir-sync only. You don't do federation at all. And in this case, you know, the users and groups are mastered on-premise, and, you know, you have that connection back up to Windows Azure AD, and that synchronization is happening. But one thing I should point out that's really important is that dir-sync in and of itself, at least today, I know this is something that we're thinking about. We can't say anything other than that. But dir-sync today does not copy your password. Okay? So even though the user account's up there, The password is still separate. And that's, you know, a challenge for some folks. So even though that user account's being copied up there, the password is still going to be a separate password. There's ways around that right now. There's third parties out there that will help you with that. You can use FIM for that. Or there's, if you want to get crafty and, you know, you really love identity and you like to code, you could, you know, script the passwords being copied up there. But it's probably not for, for most folks. The other thing is, you know, you're not going to have true single sign-on. And when I say single sign-on, I mean not only the user account, but meaning the password and, you know, you just can log in using your corporate account. So single sign-on means different things to different people, right? And in my world, in my mind, single sign-on is the same username, same password, and if I've logged in as a corporate domain joined machine, I shouldn't have to type my username and my password to log into stuff. It should just work, right, when I connect up to those cloud services. And that's what you can get with the third option, with ADFS, directory, and single sign-on. What you can do there is, you know, sign on with your corporate credentials. You can, your IDs are, IDs and passwords are mastered all on-premise because it's connecting up to ADFS. The other thing that's also a big thing to point out is if you want two-factor authentication, this is going to give you the most robust scenario, right? If you need, if you've got RSA ID or any other kinds of scenarios where you want, you know, smart cards or other things to happen, ADFS is built so that you can have those options there for the, those authentication mechanisms. With the directory only, you know, we have this thing, we acquired Phone Factor. Some of you know about that. So that is something that we're integrating in to have kind of your phone be another authentication mechanism. But that's really, at least for now, that's all we have if you just do the DirSync option, right? The cons, what is the downside to this? Well, it's going to require infrastructure, right? You're going to have to run ADFS, and we'll dig into the infrastructure side of things here in a minute. But that's really the only downside, you know, to the last option. And you get all the benefits that we mentioned there. Okay. So what I want to do now is give you a demo of, I've done this before, and I get a lot of people that say, well, Windows Azure Active Directory, what is it? Can I see it? What does it look like, right? And this is what we're going to do, is we're going to show you what that experience is like on Windows Azure Active Directory and show you the single sign-on experience in the environment. Okay. I have a VM, this DirSync 2012 VM, that is joined to my corporate domain, and I'm going to go ahead and log into that using my corporate credentials. This DC in Azure is going to now, or this member server in Windows Azure, I'm going to log in using my user account in Windows Azure. So you'll notice here it's corp David, which is corp is my corporate domain. I'm going to click OK. And this time it should work for me. And what we'll do is we'll first log into, there's something called the Windows Azure Active Directory portal. So if you go to activedirectory.windowsazure.com, that is going to be the place where there's a UX that's on top of the Windows Azure Active Directory to give you some views here. And that's what we'll show you here in just a second. Okay, it's logged in. And so I'm logged in with my corporate user account. And I'm going to go to the Windows Azure AD portal, so activedirectory.windowsazure.com. Okay, and I've intentionally not checked the box to say, keep me signed in. But what will happen is when I type david@tessar.info, which is my federated domain name, you'll notice that all of a sudden it just redirects me, and it just logs me in. Okay, now if I checked that box to keep me signed in, I wouldn't even have to type my username. It would just sign me into Windows Azure Active Directory. And that's it, right? I open the portal, boom, signs me in. And this user is an admin, of course, because, you know, an admin is only going to have rights to access this portal. But what you can see here, this is just a view of your Windows Azure Active Directory, kind of UX on top. And when you look at this, you can see that there is a number of, you know, services that are assigned to the Windows Azure Active Directory. So here you can see, hey, Exchange, I could click on the links for that. If I scroll down, you can see I have Windows Intune Direct here. Oh, a little squiggly line there. But Windows Intune is also connected up to this. And then you also can see here the users and groups. So in users and groups, there's licenses for my different accounts, right? How many licenses are assigned out of my subscriptions? And then under users and groups, here are all my accounts that I have for my service. And you can see here that there's a number of ones that are in the cloud, and there's some that are synchronized. When it says synchronized with account or ACT, I guess they have ACT as short for Active Directory, that's a synchronized account using DirSync, right, to my corporate on-premise AD. The other thing that we're going to start kind of clicking through here, we notice that now that I'm signed in, I can access a number of different things. So here is Office 365 administration portal. And the O365, boom, it signed me right in. I didn't have to click anything. And then if I go into the user accounts, this is the admin portal for Office 365. You'll notice, hey, I've got all those same user accounts there, right? And if I want to even click on services for that, let's say if I go up here to this team site, right? If I go to this team site and want to click on that, automatically signs me in. Similarly, if I went to OWA or whatever else, it's just going to sign me in there. Let's just keep on going down the list because I have a single Windows Azure Active Directory service, and I've got a whole bunch of different things assigned to that. And the next one is the Windows Intune admin portal. I'm going to go into the Windows Intune admin portal, and you'll notice it looks very similar. We had originally a problem where it was like almost identical. Even the icon was different. But now you can see up top here that there's at least a Windows Intune, logo that kind of helps you distinguish. But looks pretty similar to what you see here. And if I go into users, hey, how about that? Those same users are there in Windows Azure AD. The same ones are there. Windows Azure Active Directory is behind that, right? There's nothing else for me to show you a VM or anything deeper than that, right? It's a service that's up in the cloud. And that's where your identities are stored in. I could similarly, click on company portal for Windows Intune. Boom, I've got the user side portal to that. And the last one, and this is relatively new, is the Windows Azure Management Portal. Okay, in the Windows Azure Management Portal, so manage.windowsazure.com, what I can do is log in using my organization ID as well. If I go scroll up to the top right corner here, you can see that, this is my org ID, right? It's my federated identity, and I've automatically just signed into Windows Azure. This is really useful, right? If you want to hand out different subscriptions or have, give access to different people to your Windows Azure subscriptions using their domain credentials, right? And allow them to just sign in and access what they want to access. All right. Makes sense? Everybody with me? Yeah? Okay. All right, good. All right. Now that you've kind of seen a little bit of the user side of inaction, and that was the experience of a fully federated single sign-on org ID, in my case david@tessera.info, and federation architecture is, well, how do you do that? How do you make all that happen, right? Assuming you want to go SSO and federation and get all that experience, what needs to happen there? Well, this is something that is not really out there, and I'm really curious on the barometer on the people environment. How many people have tried to do ADFS? Okay, like maybe a quarter of you or so. Okay, you're brave, the brave at heart. One of the things, just for the rest of you, if you want to do federation and you go out there, there's a lot of documentation out there, and some of it's kind of scary. It says, hey, you need to have a project plan, and you need to hire people, and all these types of different things, and you need 18,000 servers and all this stuff, right? Well, the reality is, here's a little secret. You can get away with just one box for all the functionality. Now, this is not production. Right? You're never going to do this production, but if you just want the functionality of ADFS and single sign-on and DirSync, you could put that all technically on one machine. Right? You're going to have a DC, but you could put that all on a single machine. And even if you do nothing other than set that up, you're going to have a number of things at work. When I did the foundation session for consumerization of IT last year at TechEd, this is what we did. We had a rotating demo environment where we had ADFS set up, and it was on the on-prem demo environment. But we obviously, because of that demo environment was rotating around, we couldn't really open any inbound ports up, but we still had a lot of functionality there. We could still single sign on behind the domain to different things, right? But so that user account that's behind there on that corporate domain can sign into services 0365 Intune and connect up there. The other thing, though, that you really need to have is that inbound access. And this is usually the deal killer for a lot of folks. If you want things like Outlook to work on your client, even if it's on-premise, Outlook does some funky things without getting into it too much. But Outlook needs to be able to have that inbound access into that ADFS server for authentication in order to make that work. Or, right, I mean, if the client is from out on the internet trying to log into that cloud service after you've federated, it needs to have the Windows Azure Active Directory needs to connect back in and authenticate to that ADFS box wherever that's at. The other thing that's there, and this is kind of a general best practice, is the ADFS proxy service, all right? And the ADFS proxy service is going to, be there as an additional layer for security. It'll help reduce, expand out the load across ADFS, as well as now you've got ADFS as a non-domain join machine. It's a work group server, right? So in this case, works a little better, so you're not as concerned of, hey, I've got a domain join machine that's got access to SSL over the network. And then, of course, you don't want a single point of failure, so you might want to create a proxy of either a farm, I should say, for the ADFS proxy, or farm for the ADFS servers for production type experience. Scalability planning, I won't dig into this. There's a link there. I'm really pushing for us to get updated stats. These numbers were for at least 2008, maybe R2. I'm still trying to get more details on that. It's kind of scary when you look at the the list of requirements there. I will point out the top one, though. It's less than 1,000 users. You can get away with, and our even recommendation is just having ADFS on 2DCs and just load balance, or says NLB, network load balancing, those two machines with SSL. Okay, so that seems like a lot. And for those of you who've done this, I would love to see somebody in the audience. I mean, who has, out of those like quarter of you, maybe my guess of quarter of you who have done ADFS, how many of you can tell me about the experience that you've had as trying to set this up? Does somebody want to volunteer? Somebody just want to, somebody want to just say? It doesn't matter. I'm not going to. Somebody, please? Come on. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. What was your experience like? So how long did that take you, roughly? Okay, so 5 days. 5 days. Okay, there we go. So that's, and you're one that I would say that's a pretty positive experience. 5 days, and you were happy, and you went through white papers and stuff, and you're like, wow, that was not too bad. Now, I think a lot of people, even at that, I don't know if anybody can really top that experience, but that's pretty good. But what we're going to show you is how to make that get you going much, much faster, okay? Let's say demo environments, or even a base pilot for your production environment. Yep, I'm going to get to questions at the end because we don't have a lot of time. So what I've created is this quick start guide. So it's like 24 pages or so if you include all the table of contents and everything. But it's actually, all that guide is really just you walking through what is a menu-driven system for PowerShell. It's about 1,500 lines of code. And what that will create for you when you follow through that guide is it'll create you an ADFS server that has DirSync on it, and this is all on Windows Server 2012. And then it'll also create you an ADFS proxy server automatically when you go through that. Okay, these are all kind of the rough steps. This is kind of that long white paper in those 5 days of things, and also my quick start guide crammed into 9 steps. There's it's longer than that, but this is kind of the rough flow of things that you would go through with the guide. And what I'll show you is just what that looks like. I'm going to show you the experience of, you know, getting your ADFS going using the Quick Start Guide in the PowerShell script. Okay, so give me 1 second to switch over to my demo environment here. Okay, so what we have here is, oh, it's still going. Okay, so what we have there is the first thing is the IE enhanced security experience. So what you'll see there is, you know, you need to, for the script to run, you need to turn that off, okay? Otherwise, it'll just kind of, the screen will flip and you'll, it'll turn it off automatically with the script. But what you can see here is that this is the script itself. It's a menu-driven system that you can choose a number of different options here. There's 27 options there. And what you'll do is the first thing is install the prerequisite tools. You just click one, and you can see there we automatically installed the online tools to connect up. We also are installing the online services module for PowerShell because we need that as well. And then what we did next is choose the option to install the Office 365 deployment readiness tool. And this we run up front because, you know, this, you know, is generic no matter what kind of deployment you're doing to Windows Azure AD. It does a ton of different tests. It tests your directory. There's a lot that's there. And we wanted to do this up front in the order because there could be some things with your directory or things that you need to address before you go down this full path of doing everything. And, you know, there's a lot of different warnings that you can see in here. So in this case, right, you can see that the user it shows how many user accounts that you have here. It shows the trusts that are set up inside the environment. There's probably going to be warnings and things like that, but just take your own, you know, take your own advice, you know, make sense out of whether you need to follow those or not, because not all of them you will need to. But it's a good one to run, and this is probably, you know, in my experience, this took me on a really small domain, like almost 6 minutes to run. But it is good to just have before you start. Okay, and you can see here, hey, there's an issue without the display name, but again, it's not, you don't necessarily need to do anything after that, but it's a good best practice. All right, so then you'll notice that we're going to connect up, and option four is we're going to add a local UPN suffix in Windows Azure Active Directory. So this is, what is my domain name that I want to federate? And what you can do is, even if you have, let's say, contoso.com, or you know, you download even a VHD for an eval. For instance, the SCCM VHD eval is an awesome one that I've used for demos. And it's contoso.com, but if you want to play around with federation in a trial account, what you can do is just add your own custom domain name and make federation work if you added additional UPN suffix. And in this case, what I did is I added christianborder.com as a domain name that I own, and what I'll go in and do is show that domain name has now showed up inside of the console. So you can see in the domain name that I just added using PowerShell, it shows up in the console. And the one thing to point out is this is different than going into the console manually and adding a domain name. There's kind of two types. There's a managed domain name and there's a federated domain name. Because we know that we're going to go to federated, we just added a federated domain name anyway. And that's not really visible anywhere inside the UX. So the next thing we're going to do is add the ADFS role to the server. And this is using the one-line command for PowerShell to install ADFS on the Windows server. And you can see it's just rolling through the install there. And, you know, it's going to, you know, install just the role. I mean, this is no different than clicking through the wizard or doing the PowerShell command to do that. And that is the first experience that's there. Okay. So when we go next, I just want to highlight some of the PowerShell that's in this. Okay. There's like too much PowerShell to cover, and I know it's not applicable for everybody, but there's some kind of key things that I want to point out. One is that domain name. So as I mentioned, you know, when we add it, we're adding as federated. Some of the guidance that you'll see out there will have you add a managed domain and then flip it, and that just takes extra time to get things done. So when we added it, we just added it as a federated domain name to get go. The next thing is, you know, going and getting the MSOL DNS verification. That's just checking to get the code. So it was pretty quick as it ran by there in the test, but there's a code that you need to put external to validate that you own the domain name. Right, and that's whether it's managed or whether that's whether it's, you know, a federated domain name. You need to prove that you own you know, whatever domain name you're adding. That makes sense, right? Because then you don't want to start adding domain names that you don't own. Okay? The next thing is, you know, some of the prerequisite steps that we do is activating DirSync. So DirSync, they say, could take up to 24 hours once you first initialize it. So at the start of the script, we initialize DirSync. So that's lit up in the console and running, right? And then the other thing we do is add the role. So this is just the good PowerShell command that you have to add the ADFS role on Windows Server 2012. Okay. Then I was going to go to the kind of second set of steps, and you know, this is going to essentially configure almost entirely the rest of the ADFS server for you. And although this is, you know, this is a, as you can see, this is a video, it's not, it is pretty close to real time. There's like one or two little things that, you know, I didn't want you to have to wait for like a minute for .NET services to install, right? So you know, that's condensed, but what you'll see is pretty close to what you should experience in real time here. Okay, so what I'm going to do is go in and create a domain name for the ADFS service account. Because what you need to do for ADFS, right, to configure it is create a service account. So there's a tool in there to automatically create a service account. Then we're going in and creating an internal DNS entry for ADFS. So that's so that it points to the right place inside your network. And then we're going to go to option 10, which is processing SSL certificates. Okay, and this one is really good to have because what we can do is you can create a self-signed cert, which is not ideal for production, but it is still usable inside your environment. You could also import your own certificate if you're in production and you want to use, you know, a real certificate. There's some steps in the guide to follow that. And that is so that, you know, your SSL authentication goes successfully. So what we can do is also export the self-signed certificate, and that would be used for when you go to the proxy server and configure that, and you'd copy that certificate over if you decided to go the self-signed certificate route. And then the next thing we're doing is configuring the ADFS service, and at the bottom you can see there that we're just going to use our already put in credentials that we put in earlier, and it's just going to go in and run and configure the service, right? And so in this case, we're using it detected the certificate that we put in. It's going to run through and utilize that service to configure ADFS in an environment. It finished configuring ADFS. We'll then go and confirm that ADFS is working. We confirm that the firewall is open. And then the next thing to do is we're launching the test web pages. These are really good to know that the service is going. So in this case, right, you can see there's a bunch of goop coming up in the page. That's actually a good thing. That means that the service is responding. And if all three of these test pages are working, that's a pretty good indication that your service is up and running and working inside of your environment. Okay? So that's essentially it. I mean, there we had maybe 5 minutes of this playing. But, you know, pretty quick to get an ADFS server running. I mean, that, right? I mean, you said 5 days, getting that going. Right? This is, you know, maybe 10 minutes or something or so, maybe a little longer, and I have times towards the end here to get that running. What I want to do is just, again, highlight a couple little things about the PowerShell and what it's doing. The first thing is just to highlight is that we are using the new Windows Server 2012 commands to install the ADFS farm, and in which case you see we're pulling the certificate and using the Federation service name. By default, we're just going to use ADFS dot, whatever your domain name is. If for some odd reason you want something different than that, then you know, the script's not going to do that unless you hack the script. But that should work for everybody. And then the last thing I want to point out is this, that at least in this section, there is some, if you want to configure this on 2008 R2, I'm not going to promise or guarantee that anything is going to work, but I do know that FSP configuration wizard exe, I left that in there, commented it out in case you wanted to automate installing ADFS on a 2008 R2 box. Okay, so what have we built so far with just the steps that you've seen? Well, what you see is we've effectively built an ADFS server as far as what you've seen. But if you go to the next section of steps, you could easily go and build out an ADFS proxy server. And DirSync is going to be activated, meaning it's available to be lit up, right, assuming that's happened. It hasn't been synchronized, so all you've done is kind of flip the bit in the cloud that says, Abdersync, I'm available, waiting for you to sync up with me. And then the domain name, you've added it in there, but you haven't really verified it yet. You've just said, yeah, I want to try and use, you know, in my case, christianborder.com, and make that happen. Okay. So for the next thing that you're going to want to do, and I'm not going to get into the script just for timing on the rest of this, but the next thing you're going to do is enable that inbound access. And in this case, what we have there is 157.56. That IP address is the public IP address that is in front of the ADFS proxy server, right? Or that's, we've opened up the firewalls or whatever to go back to that ADFS server on port 443 for SSL. And so what we'll have to do is go to our domain name that we have and put in an entry for ADFS, right? Because what is going to happen is that Windows, the Windows Azure Active Directory knows that it's a federated domain name, and it's going to look for ADFS dot, in this case, christianborder.com, and it's going to try and connect to that for authentication. All right? So we put that entry in there, and what will happen is, yeah, that Windows Azure AD will then now be able to connect back and authenticate when it looks for those federated user IDs after we finish the rest of the configuration. Okay, so kind of the last two steps here are, you know, configuring AD federation support and installing and configuring DirSync. I put the proxy as optional again. I talked about that, but you certainly don't have to go through every single step in the 27 steps in the script. I often will use the script to, let's say, for instance, launch the test pages. To make sure my service is running correctly, I'll go in and, you know, just fire that off, or, you know, use different parts of the script. Of course, the script has really been tested end to end, start to finish. So, you know, no guarantees if you want to hop around and do all kinds of things in weird orders. But just generally speaking, right, you can do different settings there as it goes along. So, for instance, one of the settings that we have is get the verification code, that MS code when we added the domain name. That one is totally cool to do at any time, right? You can go back, get the MS code that you need to add for your public domain name. So the last steps is when we do this command new MSOL federated domain name and the domain name, that is what verifies. When you do it the first time, it's kind of what adds the domain name. When you do it the second time, is what verifies that. And by at this point, you'll need to make sure that MS record for your domain name, your public domain name, is out there in the public DNS servers. But after you do this command, which is, you know, under the hood of one of the commands in the script, it'll verify that domain name for you. The other thing I want to point out is this is an important one. So, you know, this script is only is supported on using Windows Server 2012. Okay, but currently, DirSync is not officially supported on Windows Server 2012. Not yet, as of today. And the reason being is because SQL 2008 R2 Express is not officially supported on Windows Server 2012. So Windows SQL 2008 R2 Express SP1 happens to be supported on Windows Server 2012. However, the DirSync team has not yet tested that out on DirSync. So, like, they're when you install DirSync, it'll install only the non-SP1 version. And I know that's something I've been talking to the program manager. That's something they're looking into. No promises on ETAs. But that support article just states the SQL Express support no matter where you're at. So if you're in production, you know, you probably want to run on 2008 R2. And the DirSync part is really the relatively easy process for all of this. I mean, you could certainly just download, use the script to even download the or just download the DirSync and install it manually and, you know, skip the automated process if you wanted to do that. And then the last thing is configuring DirSync. And the only thing really that I want to, two things I wanted to point out here is, one is this start online coexistence. This is a really good one if you want to force synchronization for DirSync to synchronize up to Windows Azure Active Directory. Just to kind of, you can run the PowerShell command manually yourself, and that's what will initiate that. And then the other thing is just there's a lot of credentials there. So if you fat finger or type something wrong, you can go back in and go through it again. But just to point that out, you're going to have a permanent DirSync credential. You're going to have a one-time, you know, enterprise credential that's there, and then a you know, credential just to connect up to online services. Okay, so the final configuration that you get with the script is, you know, the effectively two machines running Windows Server 2012 with ADFS configured, DirSync configured, ADFS proxy. You've got DirSync activated, synced. You've got the domain name added and verified. You really have the foundation of what could be a public configuration in your environment for federation and single sign-on. Okay? You know, of course, after the fact, you know, you might want to, you know, add an additional server, right? I mean, because if you are going to truly go production with this, you definitely don't want to have a single point of failure, right? So you'll want to make sure that you add an additional server to, let's say, the proxy farm or to the ADFS farm. You don't have to do both proxy and the ADFS, but, you know, whatever you do, if it's one or both, right, you're going to want to have a farm there just for higher availability. Okay, so what are the actual times taken? What are the actual times taken to get all this done? This is just my own personal testing, and I had some notes there. You know, this is steps 1 through 27, and it maps that to the document steps, okay? But effectively, you know, what you've got there is about 20 minutes, right? So is that a little better than 5 days that you had there? Yeah. So really, you know, in 20 minutes, that's assuming, you know, that you install the proxy. That's also assuming you wait the, let's say, almost 6 minutes, or it could be longer depending on the size of your directory for Office 365 readiness tool. But that's a pretty, you know, pretty quick deal, right, to get that going. So I guess the next question that I get asked, well, wait, can I do this on Windows Azure? Why, yes, you can. In case you were thinking that, let me pre-answer that question. You can run this on Windows Azure. In this example so far, in the diagrams I've shown you, we've been saying, hey, run on an on-premise VM or, you know, physical server or whatever. Well, you can run the script on a VM in Windows Server 2012 in Windows Azure. And in fact, I have that to show you. So in this case here, right, we have a VPN that's set up from Active Directory that connects up to, you know, your AD running on VMs in Windows Azure. And I have, you know, that's made highly available. This is kind of that less than 1,000 users recommendation you saw in the Federation architecture, right? There you saw how it said, hey, just use a DC with ADFS on it and load balance that, okay? This is that first recommendation. And then we have, because you can't run DirSync on a domain controller, at least not yet, you need to have a separate machine for that, all right? So effectively here, this could be a production-ready service for ADFS, all running in Windows Azure. Now, that being said, I'll have to give you a caveat. If you talk to Ross Adams, he's kind of not so held back on this scenario. And the only reason, really, that I at least gather from him is that if one of, let's say, those VMs in Windows Azure goes down, yes, you've got another one that's there, but there are some things you need to think about or limitations, right? You can't go into Windows Azure and get to the hypervisor and access the root of the virtual machine to troubleshoot it or something, right? There's some platform limitations in that way, right? Like versus running a VM on Hyper-V or a private cloud where you have access to the entire stack, right? And that's something that you can work around. I just want to bring it up as a point because, you know, you want to have some kind of backup and recovery strategy. And this is a general principle, really, with Windows Azure, right? I mean, if you got any VMs up there that are in production, you probably want to have, you know, run System Center, you know, DPM or some other just general backup solution. I mean, this is, right, again, you could treat Windows Azure like a branch site, right? And if a server in a branch site or a VM in a branch site goes down, you need something to back up and recover that virtual machine. Well, this is no real different, right? I mean, it's just Windows Server 2012 running on a VM in Windows Azure. So, you know, just think about that. That's my only thing. There's no technically other reason why you shouldn't be able to do this. You know, there's not really documentation out there that states that or anything, which I'm working on. But according to, you know, I'm working with the product team. There's nothing stopping you from doing this, or it is supported, right? I mean, Windows Azure, once we're in general availability, right, you'll have the SLA on the virtual machines. You know, it's Windows Server 2012, so you'd be fully supported to run this in production. And you know what you would see there, right, is the client connecting up to the service, which then uses Windows Azure AD. And then what you could also do, right, is set up a proxy server if you wanted to. You know, you could also have two proxy server VMs or however many proxy ones you wanted there in Windows Azure, and then have remember that challenge that we had earlier, right, which was we need the inbound SSL access? All right, well, if you have, you know, most of you are, it takes a while to talk to your network admin and say, hey, can you open up 443? Right, everybody, all your network admins just love that, right? They just like two snaps and they're just like, oh, yeah, I'll open up any ports for you anytime, like instantly, right? Yeah, not so much, right? Well, when you have Windows Azure, you know, and you have a subscription, right, you've got a public IP that's there. You can use that as your external endpoint for Windows Azure AD to connect back in, and that kind of solves that scenario a little bit for you, right? Okay, so let me show that to you. Let me show you what that looks like, and then after that we'll wrap up and give you some good resources on where you can find all this info on. Okay, so I'm back on my console here, and it happens to be, and little did you know, that this Azure DC and the Azure DC earlier that I had is my production ADFS configuration. So not only are they domain controllers, but they're also running ADFS. And so when I go into the domain controller, you know, you could use that full script to configure those VMs, which is what I did. But the thing that I'll point out is the thing that you'll need is that inbound load balancing, right? And in this case, you know, you can see here that, again, I have a public virtual IP address, okay, and I have an internal IP address. So this public virtual IP is the one that is going to be load balanced across my farm. I've got an ADFS farm, which is running on Azure DC and Azure DC2. That's a single ADFS farm for adfs.teststore.info in this case. When you run this in Windows Azure, what you would do is scroll up here, go to Endpoints, and you'll notice here I have a SSL, I call it SSL ADFS endpoint, and there, right, we're load balancing 443. On the public port, it's 443. The private port is 443. When you see here it says load balanced, yes, okay. So I'm going to click on this and just choose Edit. And when we go into Edit, what you can see is that, hey, these two are load balanced, right? There you go. You've now got NLB, so to speak. I mean, NLB is the old school, right? I mean, if you had on-premise, that's what you're using. Well, this is in Windows Azure. That's effectively load balancing, right? So it's going to alternate that load between both my Azure DC and my Azure DC2, which happens to also have ADFS on it. That's, you know, that's really it. I mean, so, you know, using Windows Azure, I think as you start to play around and use it more, it becomes a lot more familiar, right? I mean, you're connecting up to RDP, you're connecting up to VMs. You know, it's just some of the plumbing stuff that you get a handle on, which I've given you some kind of tips today on hopefully jump-starting you on using Windows Azure and getting things going. So that is the end of that demo, and I'm going to switch back over to my slides to kind of wrap up here. Okay. So hopefully what you've seen, the essentials of running Active Directory in Windows Azure. You all feel more comfortable about that? Yep. Good. Understanding identity sync options from going from AD to Windows Azure AD. We good there? Come on. Yes. Yeah, thank you. All right. Learning how to go from AD to Federation, from AD to Federation SSO and dir sync in Windows Azure Active Directory in not only less than an hour, but kind of almost even 20 minutes, right? So you can see how running it's pretty straightforward. How you probably want to use the SSO and Federation, how it provides you a lot of benefits, and you know, pretty quick to enable. So here's some resources for you. There's the Quick Start Guide in PowerShell script. You can access that at aka.ms/ad/to/aad. That's where you can find the guide. It's a wiki on TechNet, and it also links to the script that's there. You can also, that article I mentioned that gives you a lot of the tips and stuff on running AD on Windows Azure Infrastructure Service, that's a good article for that. And then the other thing I want to point out is the Windows Azure Training Kit. The Windows Azure Training Kit has a ton of content. A lot of it's developer content. But there is content there that I am developing and updating that is focused on IT professionals, like such as yourselves. Some of those are, I'll call out the HOL for deploying Active Directory and deploying Active Directory using PowerShell. That is a full lab of creating a virtual machine using either the GUI of AD or using the PowerShell. So you can create not only create the VM in PowerShell, but also create a domain controller using entirely PowerShell in that script there. And then also there's a presentation which just focuses only on deploying AD in Windows Azure. So with that, please do fill out your evaluation forms. That is really important for me. If there's something I can do better, please let me know. Fives are good. Ones are bad. Please don't be that person that puts all ones. I'd appreciate your feedback. And, thank you.